Yeah, for me, when I was younger, I struggled with like worrying about what other people thought. And I realized that like no matter what, there will always be people who are weird, who just don't like you, who might be jealous, but it's not your responsibility to care or satisfy them at all. So that mindset of just like not caring about what other people think and just like focusing on giving value, how we can help. And no matter where I go, like I put myself out there a lot. I experience a lot of different people. I don't owe anybody anything.
Hello, 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 everyone, and welcome to the CoLab Collective podcast, where we talk about relevant topics and current events on anything tech related. Once again, I'm Aaron, your producer, and hopefully you are doing wonderful. In today's episode, episode number 8, Josh is going to be talking with Grace from Design Buddies. Now, Design Buddies is an online community hosted on Discord that has designers and UI, UX, you name it, from all over the world, and that has been recently growing during this pandemic. And Grace is going to be sharing her experience about building that community from the ground up. Once again, if you have any questions or would like to suggest topics for us to talk about, feel free to reach us at teamcolabco@gmail.com or feel free to visit our website at colabcollective.ca to find out more about our initiatives. Once again, I'm Aaron, and hopefully you enjoy today's episode.
Awesome. Fantastic. So yeah, I'm really excited to chat with you. I know Leon's been talking about what you've been doing at Design Buddies. So I was wondering if you could just share a little bit about how you got started with Design Buddies.
Yeah. So for me, actually kind of goes a little bit earlier. So growing up as an Asian female, I was always told to kind of be quiet. And I shouldn't speak up and all that kind of just like culture, like at least for me, my perspective growing up. So I was a bit shy growing up. And then I realized like my parents were like super like into like, oh, be bold, be bold and just like ask for what you want. And so for me, like combining like feeling like the pressure to stay quiet in school with my parents also encouraging me to speak out, I decided to go into kind of just like meet up with people on the internet. So how this happened was, in October, kind of my community building journey started October of 2019 when I attended Grace Hopper Conference. Grace Hopper Conference is one of the largest conferences for women in tech, over 25,000 attendees. So it was really fun. It was in Florida. And so the day before the conference started, I made this event on Facebook called just a random meetup with no contact, just to connect with other Grace Hopper attendees. I just randomly planned a time, a location. In 24 hours, we had over 400 people RSVPing to that meetup with no context. Wow. Cause I honestly didn't even know. And over 100 people show up throughout the night. We took up a whole restaurant and it was beautiful all over the world. Just women in tech, from all backgrounds, even like people with PhDs, students, like all backgrounds in tech from all continents as well. So I was so nervous, like it was so scary, but it was so fun at the same time. And I realized like, this is so fun, like meeting people from all these different backgrounds, connecting with them, learning from the experiences. So I decided to do that every single week after I came back to California.
Wow. so that's where was this conference?
It was in Florida. I was at Disney World last year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was super fun. And then that was my first time really just putting myself out there, just like reaching out to people on the internet, like, hey, we're going to do a meetup. I don't know any of you, but we're going to do a meetup. And that was like fun. We kind of had a group chat after that. Some of us stayed connected and kind of like my first taste of like some sort of community building that way. Literally just making a random event on Facebook, posting it in a large group. And yeah. And then when I went back to California, I'm part of this group on Facebook called Subtle Asians Bay Area. Okay. And it's a spin off of Subtle Asian Traits, but just a group of friends around the Bay Area who are into Subtle Asian Traits. And yeah, I just had meetups and I just had like coffee and boba shop work study sessions. Nice. And I just like made Facebook events posted in there and people just like came and we just like usually 10 of us, we just like study the whole day or work the whole day in a coffee shop and then go for dinner afterwards. So I met hundreds of people that way and I kind of continue to break out of my shell, meeting new people, getting over that shyness that I was kind of grow up accustomed to. And And then, yeah, so I kind of continued doing that, also posting meeting up with local artists, reaching out to more people on the internet, realizing that people are not as scary. So right. I just kept reaching out to more people. And then I just like continue having meetups at least once a week until the pandemic hit. And around the pandemic, and I was like, oh no, this is so sad. I can't see people in real life. What am I going to do? I am sad. And at the same time, so I started design, my journey in design in October 2019. And then I was also trying to apply to internships and just try to causal community build, develop my like public speaking and interpersonal skills more as a shy person, as an ex-shy person. And also just try to network with more designers and connect with more designers. I decided to create Design Buddies because I realized that people, I tapped on like four different needs. That's how I was able to grow so much, because design, UX and product design, it's such a booming field right now. There's so many people going into it. That's why these boot camps are making a ton of money. So many career changes, yet also so many students. But there's no really clear path to design. There's multiple ways to get there, and there's no right or wrong way for people, but people are just overall confused by the overwhelming of choices. That's number one. And number two is people want to stay connected during quarantine. And number three, it comes from me wanting to prove people wrong. So a little more on that. Prove you wrong, it fuels a lot of what I do today because, well, one of my motivations what I do today. So my professor, when I was starting out design, my professor like didn't want me to do design. Like they were like, oh, you did bioengineering, you should do bioengineering for your degree, like for your career, stay in your own lane. Like, look at me, my own daughter who's 14-year-old does design. Like, you are much older, you majored in that, you shouldn't be doing something else you didn't major in. Wow. And yeah, so that was really discouraging at first. I also had other professors like that as well. Not all professors, most professors are great, but just like some, especially if they were actually department chairs. So I looked up to them before and they were telling me no. So that was like pretty discouraging. But anyways, like for me, like when people tell me no, I'm just like, okay, I don't have to listen to you. Like, I'm like, why? I'm like, oh, I'm like really all rebellious in that way too. I'm just like, okay, I'm gonna prove you wrong. And so at the same time, I tried meeting up with other designers on the internet, joining other design groups, but getting shunned for being a beginner. Because I just remember me posting my first ever case study, super proud of it, in like one of the design big design groups on Facebook. And like people were like telling me, oh my god, you're such a noob. Like, you're like, you didn't study design, you're not a real designer, you don't have a degree, you didn't have a boot camp, like you're in the wrong place. And just like, yeah, just like facing my professors and other designers telling like, oh yeah, I'm wrong. And I was like, you know what, this is not very constructive, so I'm gonna just make my own community. So I focused on like being discouraged plus design as a growing field plus staying connected during quarantine and create Design Buddies and saw it grow to 10,000 members in 6.5 months that way.
Oh my goodness, that was amazing. There's so much to unpack out of that. I want to touch on, okay, so you're in bioengineering. Are you still studying that or have you pivoted and just made a different switch?
Yeah, and so my undergrad degree, I graduated my undergrad last year. It was in bioengineering with a minor in computer science and engineering.
Okay.
And then I later, when I was graduating undergrad, at least like about a year ago today, I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. Growing up with both parents with PhDs, grad school was never an option for me.
Okay.
So I went straight to grad school, studying computer science and engineering because I knew I want to work somewhere in tech or gaming. So I was like, okay, computer science, I guess I kind of liked it when I minded in it. So I was like, okay, might as well study it. And then later finding design, I'm like, oh my God, I love this so much more. And pivoted to design. But okay. I feel like the engineering background definitely helps, but it's not my main focus.
Yeah. So I think that's why I was so excited to talk to you, because I also come from an engineering background. And I agree. I think having that like analytical, logical, systematic thinking as a background to back up the creative is pretty powerful. I mean, so that bioengineering, I think it's quite far off from design. And I was wondering if you could share a little bit about like what made you pursue it. Of course, it's more interesting and more creative, but like were there any particular things of design that inspired you to just make that shift? Because I'm sure there are other people out there who are engineering who might be contemplating the same thing, but it's a big scary shift, right? Because they're quite different. So could you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, I struggle with so much imposter syndrome at first just because I came from a completely different major, but I can find something that relates to it. I guess the backtracking a bit, how I got into bioengineering was growing up as a kid, I wanted to be an anime artist. I love drawing manga and just entertaining people and storytelling. And I thought cells, how cells interact, how photosynthesis works, and all these cellular processes, they have such a cool story to tell. Just really interesting to me. Like, I just like... was a fan of it. Like, I'm a fan of anime. Like, I'm a fan of cells in biology. Just, like, fan. Yeah.
That connection.
Yeah. And I also ran cross-country and track. I was really competitive, and I had dreams of running in the Olympics. And I wanted to learn how to biohack myself to run faster. Okay. Specifically, I came into college as bioengineering major, aspiring neurosurgeon with an MD, PhD. Wow. Yeah, combination of, like, loving the story cells tell, plus wanting to impress my parents with both MD and PhD, later not pursuing any of that, and also wanting to run faster by biohacking myself. And also growing up in the Bay Area, like a lot of kids, and especially like growing up with an immigrant family, like a lot of kids were like, oh, doctor, engineer, lawyer is the only way to success. So right. I was like, okay, bioengineering, doctor, and engineer. And so tapping on these four things, I chose bioengineering. Okay. And so I learned that after doing it, after like working in research and doing some internships, I recognized that it's not for me. I've always looked forward for it to be over. Like, I want to go home so I can draw my anime characters. And so I was just like, that's not for me. And I kind of quit. But then I guess like from bioengineering to design, what I've learned from bioengineering is like, I love the storytelling skills. And bioengineering, like, you work with a lot of different systems, cellular systems, molecular systems, and these systems thinking help a little in design systems. Yeah. Like in design systems, you have like the atom, the molecule.
Yeah.
So I think about that a lot, and how to like how things relate to each other, how different systems communicate, how things look on a web page, how design systems, these elements look together, how they relate, just like how these chemicals work together in biology. So being able to relate things with each other,
that's awesome.
Something I took away from it. And yeah, and just like that analytical thinking, just really asking why. Like, oftentimes I was in research, when things don't work out, I ask why. In design, I ask why. Like, why would redesigning this thing satisfy like a business goal or user need? So combination of like systems thinking and design systems and asking why, that critical thinking and that product strategy skill helps me in my design career today. And that's how I kind of tie relations to bioengineering and design.
Got it. Awesome. Wow, that is so good.
Thank you.
Real great. Okay, I'm just trying to look at some of the questions I have. I have so many questions for you. Okay, so what were some of like the milestone moments that you felt like formed you as a designer, like at like the way you are today? Were there certain key moments?
Yeah, the certain key, I guess like two key moments, like seeing design buddies grow and honestly landing my internship. It's, it might seem a little superficial, but like, so for me, my internship process was quite a long road of a lot of no's, a lot of ghosting, like 99% ghosted. And so it was rough. It was like a 5-month process I went through just trying to get an internship. And right. So I would just like cold message a bunch of people. I sent like 400 personalized invites on LinkedIn and just like reaching out to people, applying places, getting ghosted. And finally, after like doing a lot of information interviews and coffee chats, I landed my current internship at EA, or Electronic Arts, and it's been super fun. And so landing that internship, it basically like gave me the confidence I needed to actually do design. Cause like coming from an engineering background and coming from the fact that 99% of the reason why I did grad school was so I have another summer to intern. And just investing my time just to get another internship so I can like be ready for the real world. And it was really stressful that I wasn't getting anything until the end of May. So I actually got my offer at the end of May. Really, okay. Really late in the internship game because they usually end in March. And so that just gave me the confidence I needed. And my manager and my team was super supportive. Like, they encouraged me to like reach out to the CEO, not on top of like just like doing my work, but also like reaching out to people and like learning more and using my student card to reach out to people. And just like offered me a lot of places to learn, a lot of great feedback, and just like was super supportive overall. And just like everyone I talked to at EA was like super friendly and wholesome as well. People just like wanted to just be nice. I just like vibe with people. Like, compared to other industries I worked at, like medical devices and medicine and research in hospitals, like, it is night and day in terms of, like, company culture. Like, you know, people are, like, super chill. People wear t-shirts and shorts. People are, like, so chill. Talk about their hobbies, their passions. Medical devices and medicine, people are like, how's the weather today? And just, like, never really get it personal. So I'm just, like, I want to, like, know my coworkers more or, like, get to know them and stuff. And, like, I feel like I just relate more because we all like games. We all just, like, chill and stuff. And medical devices, everyone's, like, or, like, medicine as well, like, people are more intense and less personable, and, like, for me, it felt less approachable, because I just like to know people, like, I like to, like, vibe, like, connect with people, instead of just, like, knowing what they do for work. I think, because you're spending so much time at work, might as well be friends with them, too, and so that's what I love about EA, because people are super nice. So that's the first milestone.
Right.
Second milestone is seeing design buddies grow, because despite all the adversity I went through, design buddies went through a lot. Like, we continue to grow, even if sometimes, like, you know, naturally trolls come in, but I have 40 people helping me out. So, like, 10 people on the admin team, 30 mods, helping remove any problems that come across.
Right.
So just, like, seeing it grow, seeing myself being able to empower others to lead, having others, like, lead their own events through design buddies, lead their own clubs, lead their own initiatives. I feel like it's, like, super rewarding to me, because I was able to grow design buddies, but also have design buddies as a place for other people to be leaders as well, and to give opportunities to other people. That's why I consider, like, getting my first milestone at EA and then creating design buddies, because I was able to, like, let others benefit from that as well.
That is awesome. Now, I'd love for you to talk about, because you're saying how, you know, you're an ex-shy person. How did you overcome being shy? Because honestly, the person that you are right now in front of me is, you are not shy at all. Like, I think if anything, you're very comfortable in your own skin. And again, just looking at your background, you're an engineer, you own your own business. I think you've spoken at over 40 speaking engagements, including at, like, Figma, Microsoft, other summits. So, to me, that is a person that a shy person would not accomplish. So like, what was the mindset to, like, get over it? Or, because I know, like, even coming from Florida, like this conference, and just deciding to start your own version of it back at home. How did you kind of get over that?
Yeah, for me, when I was younger, I struggled with, like, worrying about what other people thought. And I realized that, like, no matter what, there will always be people who are weird, who just don't like you, who might be jealous, but it's not your responsibility to care or satisfy them at all. So that mindset of just, like, not caring about what other people think and just, like, focusing on giving value, how we can help. And no matter where I go, like, I put myself out there a lot. I experience a lot of different people. I don't owe anybody anything. I just, like, want to give value and help people. Sometimes people are not very nice, but that is okay. I just kind of forget. I guess I have a really thick skin, but that's definitely not natural. I wasn't born with it. I was definitely really sensitive before. But then, like, over time, as I put myself out there, facing negative comments, facing different people with different intentions, facing people who try to cause problems in design buddies, I just learned that, like, okay, it's out of my control. And they're trying to, I guess I can give some examples here as well.
Yeah.
So it's definitely out of my control and I can't do anything about it. No matter where I go, there are always people who just don't like me for whatever reason, but it's not my responsibility to make them like me or to correct them or anything or to respond to them. And so that mindset, just, like, yeah, just kind of taking the burden off myself and just, like, focusing on myself and how I can help others instead of fighting back or, like, focusing on people who don't vibe. Basically helped me be more comfortable in my own skin, and, like, definitely the people, like, I guess, like, so I was, like, so first of all, I just say, like when people don't like me or people don't respond, I just, like, forget about it. Because there's so many people, like, so I guess, like, number one, like, being thick-skinned and knowing that you don't owe anybody a response, and also knowing that not everybody will respond to you. So that being, like, sometimes I would reach out to people, but they wouldn't respond. Sometimes they'd be busy or whatever. I just say, like, thank you, next. And just, like, nothing on me. Probably they're just too busy or something. And just keep moving on. And just, like, dealing with people. So I guess kind of going back a little bit further in my life, I guess how I developed just thick skin was actually from a childhood experience of being bullied a lot, like online. And yeah, I was actually pretty bad. Like, I don't know how deep I should get, but just having
deep as you want.
All right. Trigger warning. So I guess like this kind of goes on to self-confidence. So I promise it relates.
That's perfect.
Yeah. So when I was a child, kind of like going back in time a little bit. So when I was a child growing up, I was 12 years old. I was in middle school. I was really, really shy. And that left a lot of people to step over me and to kind of take advantage of me. And so for me, I've always just been really shy, not really speaking up for myself. And then like one time I was in seventh grade. There's eighth grader who stole $500 worth of my Nintendo DS games. And yeah, I let people walk over me like that. And that was the first time, like, people stole my stuff before. People stole my pencils. I didn't even speak up because I was so shy. People stole my alpha gels. People stole my stuff. But that girl who stole $500 worth of games, I was like, okay, this is a bit much. So I asked for it back really nicely. I was so scared. I approached her. I was like, can I have it back? And she was like, no. I didn't steal them. And like, my friend who was friends with her, like, saw them in her room. So that's why I know they're there. And so I was like, okay, I just kept persisting. Like, can I have it back? I was like really persistent with it every day. I was like, I started to get more firm. Like, I want it back now. And like, she just said no. On top of that, she was a popular kid as well. I was just like, this random nobody in school. And like, she got all her friends to gang up on me to attack me. And because I was just like, she thought I was threatening her by asking for it back. And like, I definitely was getting more aggressive with it as well. But what she did, she got her old friends to gang up on me, basically to the point where they're stalking me at school, throwing food at me, telling me I shouldn't live anymore, like at school and online every single day for like 2 months. And yeah, so from that experience, I've learned to pick my battles. I learned, like, do I want to fight back, waste my energy, my time to please these people, make them change their mind about me, make them like me, or do I want to focus on myself to improve myself, to give value, or just like focus on what I can control. And so that's how I started running. I started running cross country and track. I went from like the slowest person to the fastest person in my school, claimed all the school records. And by the end of high school, the people who told me to die earlier were asking for running tips. So that's how I
what a transformation.
Yeah, so that's from a young age I've learned to have really thick skin, pick my battles, and just like not be afraid to like really put myself out there. Because like, if someone doesn't like me, what does that really mean? I ask why. Like, yeah, like, why am I feeling sad if that random person doesn't like me? Like, how would that affect my life? Nothing. So I just keep moving on and just, like, ask why. Be my own therapist, I guess.
Yeah.
And just keep moving forward.
I mean, I think that's really wise of you. That you take the time to be introspective and just think, okay, is this benefiting me? Like the whys. I think that's really great.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, awesome. I want to get into, thank you so much. That was so great.
Yeah, of course.
A little bit about how you grew Design Buddies from like within 6 months to, you just said in the last couple of days, now 10,000 people, 10,000 members. How did you guys start it? Like, I know, you know, there's that story of the professor saying like, maybe design wasn't meant for you, but you know, and out of that you kind of grew. But like, yeah, can you share a little bit of like how you guys got started, what were the initial phases, and then yeah, and then we can probably dive into some challenges that you encountered.
Yeah, of course. So I started so actually Design Buddies started as a messenger chat in February, but it wasn't active at all. It was a small chat. So I posted an Asian creative network on Facebook. That's essentially how I started, how I got my first 200 members through Asian Creative Network on Facebook.
Okay.
Just like, I just wanted to meet some designers. Like, I had no idea. I was shy reaching out to people. So I was like, okay, I'll make a chat and like reach out to people that way. So I have some kind of common ground that way. So I did a chat, like a messenger chat with like 100 designers. And like, it kind of died off because it's messenger. So there's like one chat for all. People felt a little shy because it pings everybody. So... Yeah, and like in April, I was like, yeah, people suggested I make a Slack. I was like, I don't like Slack at all. I like Slack, yeah, I have a long list of reasons, Discord over Slack. But I chose Discord.
Agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Like, yeah, I can get into it. I don't know if you want to. Well, like, yeah, definitely chose Discord.
We can talk about later on. Yeah.
Of course, yeah. So biggest thing for community builders out there listening, Discord over Slack. No paywall, more engagement. Yeah. Yeah, you won't regret it. So I chose Discord and I made design buddies. And then the first few hundred members were from that chat and also from Asian Creative Network. And so from that chat, that's how I found my first two admins, Jess and Brian, who now help me with events and design. And so they've been on since the beginning and they helped moderate the Discord community as well since the beginning. And we kind of just like grew it and just like, we just like whenever people comment, like on, we all are part of a lot of Facebook groups, like me and Brian. So like whenever people posted a question about, oh, I want to find some design communities or how do I start design? We were like common design buddies on their thread and people who are interested were like join it as well through Facebook. And and then I started just like posting it like on different groups. I was like, yeah, I'm starting community on like the project channel and stuff like that. And I posted it on my own social media. And that's how we got our first 1,000 members. We were just like posted on our own social media and just like posted in like other groups where advertisements were permitted. That's how we got our first 100 members. And then we also posted, and sometimes people like go to virtual events. So like we had posted in events as well in the chats. If people are advertising, we slide in our advertisement as well. So kind of assess, feel the, yeah. So like sometimes people are sensitive, like to, sometimes it just like feels weird to advertise. So if people are, so in virtual events I go to, if people are advertising, then I advertise as well. If people don't, then I don't. Okay. But that's how I advertise in the beginning. So advertise via live events when other people are plugging, groups like Facebook groups who allow advertising, and well, targeted marketing where people ask a question about, oh, what design communities? Then we comment design buddies. And also we posted in some Slacks and like appropriate channels like side projects. Just being mindful about different group rules and when to advertise and stuff is when we just like take advantage of it as well. And also all over on LinkedIn. And yeah, we mostly Google people from LinkedIn. And then, yeah, that's how we got our first 2,000 members. And then we started doing events and having our branding, our website, our logo and everything. And then people started just like joining our events. Like all of our events had over 100 over 100 to 200 to 300 attendees. And like people would just like post about us on LinkedIn, on Twitter, on Instagram without us telling them to. So it's cool. They're just like basically marketing for us. Without us telling them to. And so that's how we got, so from like, from our first 4 months, we kind of grew like 1,000 members a month, and then we started growing 2,000 members a month consistently since then. So we haven't slowed down yet or at all. So people keep just like keep plugging about us and just like sharing their friends. And then most recently, I guess like, yeah, that's how Design Buddies grew. People just like, it's just started with me and some of the admins just kind of plugging in everywhere we can. And then later, having a good foundation, like a solid foundation, and people plugging for us. And that's how we've been growing. And now, a lot of people have been reaching out to me on LinkedIn for help in design. Sometimes I don't have the bandwidth to answer all their questions. So yeah, I was like, you know, you can join Design Buddies. We have an FAQ new design channel. You can join all our resources, connect with other designers, get all your questions answered. So I would tell people to join Design Buddies instead. If I don't have time. So, well, I tell everybody nowadays, like just like this month, I was like, okay, now if people ask me design questions, I can give them a resource. You're in Design Buddies.
Yeah.
So, and then like in Design Buddies, I subtly thank people for sharing with their friends to kind of imprint that on mine, like, oh, I can actually share Design Buddies with my friends and my groups. So a lot of external marketing. So I don't really post a lot anywhere. I don't really spend that much time marketing. It's mostly just like people posting about us, me saying it's okay to post about us, and just like me telling people who message me about it. And we have admins that also help post it in their groups as well, and moderators that help spread the word. So yeah, that's how we grew and how we started. Just started with just like a community, and then we had events, and now we had a mentorship program, and we have more promo codes and just like even more events. And in the future, we have a merch store and a conference lined up. So a lot of big plans.
Yeah, I was taking a look at your roadmap. It's very ambitious. Okay, so by the time you got 2,000 members, that's when you started doing events. Now, are these all Zoom events?
Yes, is that right? They're actually mostly Zoom events. We started with just Zoom meetups. Actually, interesting story. We actually Zoom bombed at the first meetup. Yeah, so that was another challenge that came along the way. So there was 30 people the first meetup. We had this fun Figma file. We all made our own like name cards, drop a picture, add some fun facts. It was this fun icebreaker activity to get to know each other on Figma, on Zoom, using Zoom and Figma.
That's great.
Yeah, super fun. And then like within the first 5 minutes of the meetup, six people came in, overtook the audio, the chat, the screen, the drawing tool, and just like screamed racist things about Asians. And wow. Drawing inappropriate images, showing inappropriate things. And so I was, you know, this is the first Design Buddies meetup, you know, first impressions.
Wow.
And I was like low-key, high-key traumatized by that. And yeah, so I was just like shook AF. Like, so, and then I posted about that on LinkedIn. I posted about what happened, what I've learned from it, and what I would do differently next time. So that's why now we have verification and how all these security measures. And that post blew up on LinkedIn. My first post that kind of went viral. I think it had like 70,000 views or something.
Wow.
And I got zero negative comments, even though it was like my own like ignorance of not setting security settings. I was too trusting of people. Like I never thought I'd be Zoom bombed until I actually get Zoom bombed.
And that was your first meeting too. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, but then everybody came back except for two people. Like people were like, oh my God, it's not your fault. You didn't know. Like you had no idea they were coming. People were super nice. They all came back except for two people. And like that's how I met my other admin, Yashar, who owns a merch warehouse and helped us with a lot of IT and merch stuff as well. Because he was also at that meetup. And that people, it was like a 2 hour long meetup, but people stayed up for like 3.5 to 4 hours. And we were just chatting, making good friends. And yeah, so that it was a good outcome. Like people definitely, I was scared and I was traumatized. People were like really supportive, really understanding. That's when I realized like designers are super nice. Like no one blamed me for that. Even though I knew it was like I should have said a password or should have like had a waiting room. But then again, there's no really way I can prevent anything like that from happening because people can always change your name. People can share paths with people. Like there's no really anything I can prevent Zoom bombing. So I just kind of like went along with it. I just like kind of forgave myself, people, and people are super nice and no one really like remember. No one ever brings it up. I just treat it as a learning experience. And I just post on LinkedIn like, hey, I know this happened, but this is what I learned and inspired people to like think about this more, inspired them to be more careful about their meetings as well. Sharing my experiences of something traumatic that happened, but also making it like a lesson for people to learn. So that's how our event started.
I love it. That's your philosophy. Just take a sour lemon, make it lemonade and make the most out of it.
So for
those who are thinking of, you know, creating their own communities, like when you guys sat down and thought, okay, when you're going to launch your first event, what did you guys plan on doing in terms of just like facilitating the meeting? Was it just going to be like open-ended discussion just to hang out, or did you guys have some like workshops that you had lined up?
Yeah, so first meeting was just a hangout. We had a Figma file, a collaborative Figma file to interact in. So people got to make their own name cards on Figma, make their own Figma spinoffs. And yeah, so that's all our first few meetings. Like our first few events were once a week. They're meetups, just like Zoom and Figma. We switched to Discord chat and Figma just to make it more secure and stuff. We kind of moved off Zoom. I kind of stayed away from Zoom for a while because I was a little traumatized. I literally went back to Zoom, had more security settings and stuff, and it was all good.
Yeah, I understand, because we've been playing with Discord. This is like the group video sessions, right? Mm-hmm. You can only cap at like a certain number of people, is that right?
Yeah, 25 people with video, which is a little limiting.
Okay, then when you grew, you had to go to Zoom.
Yeah, okay. So we use Zoom because oftentimes, So we had meetups at first and we started to do workshops and have a lot of guest speakers on as well. We also experimented with other meetup tools like Run the World and Icebreaker, which is like one-on-one matching. Okay. So we experimented with those as well, but we learned that people prefer a group setting. So we continued to use Zoom, and we also like people wanted more workshops, more AMA. So we hosted more of that, and it's easier to plan. So I don't have to like interact too much. It's like easier on me. So I can just invite some speaker on and just like ask questions and stuff and just like moderate. So people love that. So we always have it on Zoom because we can record it and put it on YouTube easily. We can like live stream it easily. You can't do that on Discord. You can't. It's like hard to record and like hard to put it on, make it a file and put it on YouTube. So that's why I use Zoom, and people, it can take a photo of everybody, like all like a few hundred people, like make a little collage and stuff. And yeah, so that's why we use Zoom. But we also have like a waiting room, and we also lock people's ability to chat. To we also may make everybody muted when they come in unless they're a host,
right?
And just like make turn screen sharing off, just like little security things like that we always turn on.
I learned my lesson.
And so yeah, so far we had no problems and people were super chill and super happy. Yeah, so we have a lot of types of events. We have like 5 events in October. We have 5 in November as well. So just having an events team to help me out with that too is how we kind of expanded on our events.
Great. And like, how do you find your team members? Because I think I read you wrote an article where, or maybe it was your website, where you had to let go of some admins and you know, shuffle around. And those are like part of the growing pains. So so how did you, what was like your criteria to like, now that, you know, you're a little bit more wiser, what are you looking for in like a good teammate in terms of like community building?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'll talk about the mistakes I made at first, which helps me define what I'm looking for. So when I was starting out, I was like, I was just like someone with really little experience. So if anyone wanted to help out, I was like, oh, I'll just let them help out and stuff like that. They're just nice people. Like, they just say yes. I said yes way too many times. And in terms of like admins, also in terms of partners as well. So biggest mistake is saying yes without really knowing much. Because I was like, oh, they want to help out. Okay, opportunity. Like, let's say yes. It resulted in people just like not, it wasn't anything bad, but it was just like people just like saying yes in the beginning, but not really following up with us, or just like not being committed and stuff like that. Yeah, so people just like kind of faded away, and that's how I removed them. But I also told them, like, I asked them, like, are you still interested? And they're like, no. I was like, okay. And like, yeah. And so I later made people, we later decided to do like a admin application. So applications, this was when we had about 2,000 members in July, or yeah, around June or July time. We sent out applications. It was a really short application. We had some positions to fill. We also defined, first we also defined like a need to take on new admins. Like, do we need someone to moderate? Do we need someone to lead the content creation team? Do we need someone to help us make merchandise? And kind of fill deficiencies or supposed gaps that way. And then later we'll launch applications while like having a clear goal of who we're looking for, like clear needs, so we can assess people properly. So we sent out applications and we had over 70 people submit. We interviewed 11 and took on 4 from those 70 people back in June or July. I can't remember.
Did you interview every single one, or did you have team members to do that?
I had team members to do that. I kind of split the work. As a leader, like, I like to call myself like a leader, not a manager, but like as just like someone who just likes to lead things, I like to like empower people to do things themselves as well. So I was like, I trust you that you can interview well and you have good judgment. And by saying that, they usually, you know, try to live up to that as well. So yeah, there's that as well. And so that's how I found my new admins. I was like, yeah, you, I told them, like, you are one of the 4 who made it for the 70 applications. And so now they have to understand like how hard it was to get in. And so they're like, yeah. And then I also set really clear expectations in the beginning. So we have a weekly all hands meeting, and like if people miss 2 in a row without notifying us with a valid reason, then we will ask if they're still interested and maybe remove them and stuff like that. So far, after implemented that, everybody has been super responsive. Because I'm always just like, we're all in this together. If you don't want to be here, like, you're all welcome to like take a break, or you can like take a break and come back anytime. I'm like super chill and stuff. I'm not like a tyrant. And so that also helps people like retain and stuff like that as well. And yeah, so that was how we, like, our first cohort of admins were just people who want to help. And most of them, like, as half of them stayed. And their second cohort was the people who applied. And our third cohort, meaning 2 people, was just people who have been really active in the community, who have been contributing, who have been helping moderate. Wow. So people from our moderators group got promoted to admin. And they're from both Asia and Europe because different time zones really important to stay moderated and like when we're all asleep and stuff. So yeah, we just look for people who are active now. So nowadays it's only invite only. People who have been on the moderator team for a while get admin. And our moderator team is just the 30 most active people who have no history of causing problems in the server. And that's our focus group. We meet once a month, talk about what's going well, what's not going well, and reflect retrospectives. And yeah, those are moderators too. They have powers to like, they have mod powers. And admins have more decision powers. But mods can be promoted to admins if there is a need and they are a good fit.
Okay.
So that's how our process worked. And
that's amazing. So that's primarily managed on Discord. And that's like the typical structure of like Discord gaming communities, right? You got your moderators, admins, and things like that, right?
Yeah. So admins make more decisions. Like they're part of like more decisions. And then moderators help contribute, give feedback to decisions, but they're not the ones saying the final yes or no.
Okay. That's good. Because I know some of our listeners are still relatively new to Discord. Unless like, if you're not a gamer, you probably haven't heard of it. So yeah, that's great. Wow. Okay. So yeah, I just want to reiterate. So you're saying as a leader, your role is actually not really to be a manager per se, but actually someone who empowers others. That's really great.
Thank you.
I think it's very easy for people in like founding positions or whatnot to just like grab onto it. It's like, this is my baby and have control. And I think, all the things that you're doing is like, right. You're willing to let it go. You're sharing this vision and dream. And naturally that's how you guys grow into like 10,000 people. So I do want to ask you, was there a point where, you know, every month you're getting 1,000 new members and it started getting like larger than what you had expected. Did you have like a moment where like, hey guys, this is exploding. We probably need to like pause and kind of reassess. Was that like a gradual thing or was that a specific moment?
We kind of grown like at the same, well, so the first 4 months we grown 1,000 members a month. And for following that, we grew 2,000 members a month and it hasn't slowed down at all. We've been growing at like the same rate. I never felt too fast or too slow. We just kind of took on more moderators as needed, took on more help as needed. So we always had people on all hours of the day, literally from all time zones. And they're like the most active people checking it the most. So I just like, how we deal with growth. I just like trust more people and just like, not trust, I guess trust more people to help out. Just like have more people helping out. And so, because I'm just one person, and so as a leader, not only does it empower people, but also like it's easier on me because I don't have to manage so much. Because I also am an intern, I'm a student, I'm an art business, create content. And so it's a lot. I also do a lot of speaking events as well. I had to make slides, make content to speak, content for social media. And so it's a lot. But I also do a lot of things so I can talk about it in my content. Having a team helps out so much, and how I deal with growth is just onboarding more people to help out. So there's never a time where I thought we're going so fast. We want to go fast so we can like have more numbers, because right now we're building our foundation, so like later we want to attract more investors, more sponsors, we can negotiate a higher deal because we have more numbers. And so we to pay for our operational costs and everything. That's why we focus on foundation, our engagement, our member count, our metrics. So that's why it's super important for us, like not slow down, but instead like accommodate to the growth by like onboarding more admins or help out.
Right. Wow. I mean, did you learn marketing from elsewhere or?
This
seems like pretty advanced stuff. Yeah.
Thank you. It's all from personal experience. Like I've always been, so like when I was younger, I also had a running blog, kind of going back to the high school times, like because I didn't really have many friends at school because I didn't really fit in. I've had my own blog on Tumblr called I Run Great Space, where I talked about like adversity / what I've learned. And I've learned a lot of skills in social media, how to like copywriting skills. And I always like, for me, I've always been like business person. Like I've always like thought, how does this feature, how does this thing lead to revenue. I always think in terms of like big picture terms.
Okay.
It's being able to tie things to an actual business metric instead of being theoretical. Like, I'm not theoretical at all. I was just like, how is this practical? So I guess like growing up with that kind of mindset, just like, oh, how like improving my writing, my copywriting is really important to go in marketing. So I've been doing copywriting since I was like in high school, technically. Wow. Without being aware of that, I was actually, when I was like thinking of titles, thinking of posts, that's actually copywriting. I didn't know that. Yeah. And so I had a lot of practice in that. And also just like being practical, like wanting to be realistic, for me, I'm not a very theoretical person. I just like know like how does this thing achieve results and how can results be achieved and things like that. And just having that goal and that mindset, just like doing things and keep moving forward and trying new things and trying different marketing tactics. I would try a lot of marketing tactics and stuff. And I never really read anything about marketing. Like I also never look at it. I just like trial and error. And okay. Just like trial and error and copywriting are these two things I just didn't realize I've been doing, but I've been doing, and it helps me in my marketing skills.
That's great. So just try new ideas, put it out on like social media, and then review the metrics, I guess.
See like how many engagements.
Yeah. Okay. And then just like rinse and repeat and figure it out.
Yeah. Cause everyone's so different, like different accounts, different target audiences. So what works with someone else might not work for you. So try out everything. Copywriting, important skill, but just trying out different ways to do copywriting.
Okay. Okay. Now I have to ask you, what type of tools do you use to even capture all these ideas or even organize it? Now I noticed you use Notion, and that's like one of my favorite tools. I'm curious, how you use that and other tools like Figma to just organize your content and your events and all that.
Yeah, of course. So we use a combination of Notion, Figma, Google Drive. So for our internal team. So Notion is mostly everything. It's with all our meeting notes, all our external contacts, all our applications, all our, like everything, like ideas, brainstorm, everything. And for Figma, it's all of our, I do all the marketing design as well. Like I'm really interested in marketing. So I make all the banners. I design all the banners on Figma. Just fun for me. I just like doing it.
So good.
Thank you. And I also have our website design. Like Brian, one of our design leads, is working on the website on Figma. So on Figma, we do marketing design, website design. And then on Google Drive, that's where you have all our forms and external docs. Like, for example, we want to invite speakers on the panel. We share the questions on Google Form because that's in a format that I'm more familiar with in Notion, and it can make comments and stuff more easily. So that's why I use Google Form for that, or Google Drive for that. So Google Drive for forms and external resources. We also have networking sheets that we share at events because we realize people plug a lot in chats, and we want a way for people to connect as well. So every event, we have a networking sheet. So we have that in Google Drive. So summing up, all of our content is in Notion. Like everything logistics related, events related, calendar related is on Notion. We also everything else is on, all the design stuff is on Figma. And then we don't even use any other apps to design, just Figma. And all Google Form, Google Drive is all our forms and external information, external docs. And then Google Calendar is all of our meetings and all of our dates and stuff.
Very cool. Oh, I'd love to peek more into like how you guys set up your operations. But that's more my own thing. So for those who are interested in your events, what can they expect? Like what type of workshops and Figma exercises or activities?
Yeah, so we have a wide variety of events, mostly geared towards, most of our events have so far been towards beginner designers. But we have some more like engineering UX collaboration, how to value your work as a designer. So we recently had self-awareness as the most important design skill. So we have deep topics like self-awareness, how to design a portfolio, how to craft your portfolio language, copywriting, AMAs with industry leaders. We even invite just like industry influencers on as well. We invited like three on so far. So yeah, just like, we have all sorts of types of events, and usually like for our events, I usually just like start off with a little icebreaker. I like to make it like super interactive. Like when I present, I always ask a lot of questions, let people engage in a chat. So for example, when I start an event, I have all the guests lined up and stuff like that too. And I just like introduce design buddies. So the first 3 minutes is a wake but trickle in. I do icebreaker, like, let us know your favorite game. Let us know from level of 0 to 10 how hype you are right now. And type hype in the chat. You are super hype. And that's how I engage people, like, in the chat. And I always ask questions throughout, just get people like really moving in the chat. And just like encouraging people to turn their camera on as well. And at the end, after the guest speaker, after the, and also another level of engagement is after the guest speaker does its talk, or after we ask the panel the questions, we also leave room at least 15 minutes for the guests or like the attendees to ask questions to unmute themselves and ask as well, so they can be part of it. And then at the end, another thing we started doing is we take a group photo, but we also do a waving pose, or like people sometimes do like dab or sometimes do a wave for our Instagram story. So not only these people energize, feel like they're like part of a party, but also it drives more followers to our Instagram. So that's how our events work.
Wow. I could see how all your thoughts and everything, like, they're all connecting. That's
really amazing. They all lead to growth, lead to benefiting, satisfying user needs, and also meeting business goals by increasing more metrics, more traffic to our site, for to our account.
That's amazing.
And we share a networking sheet as well. So our networking sheet, on the top, we have a fixed link. It's like, this is all our Design Buddies socials. Join us. Because all people from, so we also advertise our events externally in other design groups, and the people from other design groups join, and they find out about Design Buddies that way. And so that's why we have all the Design Buddies link fixed on top. And we have all, people want to stay connected, so we have places where people can input their social media links, their bios, for people to connect with each other on social media as well. So there's like different, there's like people can engage in the chat, engage in the photo, engage in the party thing, and also engage in networking sheet, and engage in the pre and post event discussion in our Discord server. So satisfying the user needs by driving up engagement while reaching our business goals as well, increasing our metrics. So later we can increase our numbers to generate more revenue from our sponsors we reach out to. So that's how everything works. In terms of events, that's how we market ourselves.
Okay. Did you guys have to go through like a whole user journey map and all, and you broke down all the touch points?
Not really, actually. Not really. For me, I just kind of did it. Like, I didn't really do any studies or anything. I just like, oh, I'll just like do this. Because I also attend a lot of online events. I also helped run this other really large intern community called Intern Club a summer on Slack. And I hosted events up to like 200 to 300 attendees each. And I've learned to learn how to interview the guests. And not, because I'm usually used to being the person being interviewed. And like, interviewing other people is a whole different skill. So I learned to do that. And I learned to like moderate five different chats going on at the same time, and just like being and just like really moderate things, and just like knowing how to interact with crowds is what I've developed by being part of other organizations. I was also part of UX Wizards. I host like co-work sessions back in April. So being part of other orgs and hosting events like lower scale, like I guess like other events with other organizations, helped me host events for Design Buddies. And like at the end, I just carried on what I've learned in Design Buddies. And like, I would just like think of new ideas, like the waving thing. Literally, like, I just had no idea. I just like decided last minute at last event, I was like, okay, I'll do that for Instagram store, because that could drive more followers here, because we're almost at 1K. We want to do that. And at the end of every event, we also have a short few minute retrospectives with our speakers talking about what went well. Is there anything they wish they talked about more? And that's where we get a lot of feedback from the speaker, so we can make the experience better. So combining that, so just like from my experience, plus getting feedback, plus getting feedback from the community itself. So I'm always asking for feedback and stuff. And I didn't really do any studies. I kind of just like looked internally to see like what people wanted and kind of designed accordingly. And for events, I have this whole checklist, I guess I do have a user journey mapped out. It's just a template I kind of just like wrote up based on my own experience. And just like I share it with my admin team, like helps them like know what to do, so I can like so I can train them to do events. So yeah, it's like a little user journey, event journey, and the checklist of things to do. Like, make sure you have a networking sheet, make sure to tell the guests to come 15 minutes early, make sure to ask the guests if it's okay to record on YouTube. It's just all these little things. Make sure to send a Zoom background to the guest. All these things. Make sure you ask them if it's okay to take a photo. Yeah, just all these things we have to make sure.
These checkbox lists and like Notion that
yes, they are created? Checkbox on Notion. Yeah.
So awesome. So great.
So a lot goes into events.
Definitely.
It gets easier over time, though.
That is so amazing. I feel like you are such a rare breed to combine all these, these skill sets, these talents, these passions, and put it together into like event planning and like bring in like the systematic design systems, even into like Figma. Because I even saw how you guys created like a game level builder.
Yeah.
Like, how you just templatize like blocks. And I see like how, yeah, you applied that into planning like the step-by-step template for typical events. I think that's so great. Well, you know what? I'm sold. Like, I am ready to join Design Buddies.
Thank you.
I'm sure everyone who's listening is really keen. So for those who want to get involved, what's the best way to find out or join, or if they want to like contact you or your team, how can we do that?
Yeah, so Design Buddies, like the link to join is just discord.gg/designbuddies. We have our own vanity URL because we're Discord partners. So really exciting. But our official website is designbuddies.community. We're most active on LinkedIn. Like, we have a LinkedIn and Instagram profile. We also have Twitter and Facebook, but most of our engagement comes from LinkedIn and Instagram. And feel free to contact me if you have any questions about Design Buddies. I'm active on all the social media platforms. If you DM me on any of them, I will respond.
Amazing.
So I have LinkedIn. I have Instagram. I have 5 Instagram accounts, but really just mostly 2. my main one, my art one. And I have Twitter. I have Facebook. I even have Snapchat and Discord chat. And yeah, so you can reach me on any of these platforms. I probably don't check Snapchat. Probably shouldn't say Snapchat. I don't really check anymore.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm on all the platforms. You can like whenever, if you find a link on my portfolio, like a social media link, then that's the one I check. Okay. So if you reach out to me on any of those platforms that you feel most comfortable with.
Wow, amazing. All right. Thank you so much, Grace. It's been a pleasure. And for those of you out there, if you like this episode, please give us a 5 out of 5 on Apple Podcasts or shoot us an email at teamcollabco@gmail.com. Again, if you want to check out Design Buddies, it's designbuddies.community. And have a wonderful day, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on. This is super fun.